What's going on, everybody? Daryl Freda, the club CEO here, and we have another amazing episode of the My DJ Story podcast brought to you by the Club App, the number one online community for DJs where you can stream for free and not get cut off. Today, we have my brother DJ Quest Coast here to tell his DJ story. Brother, can you please introduce yourself to the people, who you are and where you're from?
Thank you so much, good brother. Daryl, I appreciate you in the Club App. I go by the name of DJ Quest Coast, hailing from the city of Inglewood, California. It's a small city in the big city of Los Angeles, for all those that don't know. So I'm from LA, born and raised. And, you know, I started DJing at 10 years old. My mom and dad were fortunate enough, and I was fortunate enough to get turntables one Christmas. And I nagged them. I was just in love with music at that time, and everything about music just was, you know, what excited me and had me very just open. I was writing music. I wanted to, you know, be a rapper. I wanted to produce. I wanted to just do it all. Music was my outlet. I didn't really like sports as much. I played all the sports. And when I found music, I didn't really play sports as much anymore. And so on that journey, I began contracting parties at like 14 years old, turned that into a real business for myself. At 17, I had my first club residency that lasted for 5 years. And that was at one time in some clubs now, but now that I'm a preferred age, I laugh at it. But like when I was 17, it was like 25 preferred, you know, above. So it was one of those OG clubs. That meant, for people that don't know, you know, if you don't know, that meant the older folks was there. It was 30. It was really 30, 35 and up, 40 and up, you know. I really, really learned a huge. It was like college for music. It was music college, because when I started at 17, we did a happy hour from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then from 8 to 2 was the regular night. Little small hole in the wall bar, about 150 people. But from 6 to 10 for 5 years, I played nothing but Motown, classic 70s, 80s, you know, for 4 hours. For 5 years in a row, you know, and I'm 17. So I was already in love with that kind of music. So it was easy for me. And, you know, there was a part of that of myself at the time, like my friends are growing up and they're listening to all the cool stuff and going to all the cool parties. And I'm here, you know, in the 25 preferred club, but it paid off. And as you learn more about me, you'll see like where 20 years later, that putting that work in and getting that part of my DJ, you know, understanding and mindset built in that style of music and understanding all that, it just paid off in so many different ways, from a producer, from writing music to even working with certain artists as my career progressed.
That's awesome, brother, and a wonderful introduction, man. From 10 years old, getting your first turntable, 14-year-old doing parties, and 17, getting your first residency at a club, man. That's super amazing, and I think that a lot of DJs talk about their first club residencies, where they really learned and got their stripes and really gave them the foundation for their DJ career. You know, I would love, briefly, before we jump back into your story, you know, how can DJs look to get that first residency gig or opportunity, you know, and how did you get yours?
You know, relationship is key. You know, when you're building your brand, right? Your brand is what stays in the room when you leave, right? So relationships is key. I got my first gig based off of a relationship that was already had. My parents were friends with the owners of the bar, and they frequented different events and different things. And so when it was my time to, hey, my son DJs, they threw me in there. It wasn't really about the money the first time. And it was like one day they saw me do it and they was like, oh, we want him. It was, you know, I was 17 in an older club. So it was already a thing, like, who's that little boy up there playing all this crazy Motown and all this cool stuff? That was cool. But for DJs that want to start, the climates are a lot different now. So I would tell people, you know, your repertoire of what you can actually do. So like what we can do in the internet now, videos, mixes, your content. will be your relationship builder at this point now. And so I can't employ DJs enough to like get in that room. You don't have to look the best necessarily, but we know what you sound like. I know a DJ from a selector, from a playlister. I know the difference. Just, I can listen and I'll be like, oh, okay, that's a DJ. He got the mic game. She got the mic game. She got technique. She knows how to bring in the music. She knows how to, she's presenting this as an entertainer versus like pushing the go and playing the music and going from song to song and making an announcement here and there. It's like, no, it's a big difference, you know? So, yeah.
Awesome advice, man. I would love to jump back to your story. You know, where did you go from there? You said, you know, after that intro, 5 years at the residency, you know, you had a 20-year career of doing some great things in the industry. So I'd love to dive deeper into some of the things that happened within those 20 years.
Absolutely, man. So I DJed there for like 5 years. They made a lot of money too during that time. And I wasn't making as much. Of course, I wanted more. And the way that I could get more was doing more private events. So that kind of birthed the mobile DJ in me. And I started, over that time, I accumulated a lot of equipment. I started sound engineering. I started a studio, started doing mixtapes. So all of that kind of built up to where I would do a lot of local mixtapes for a lot of local artists in the LA area. And I eventually met somebody named Dom Kennedy, and I would host and co-produce his first mixtape, his debut project. And that went over really, really well for him. And it kind of launched his career off in another direction. For me, I was always like the businessman as well as the entertainer. So the business was so much more important to me just as I started to understand just the nature of what I was doing, you know? And so what ended up happening is like I started a studio. I expanded the mobile DJ business into a full-on production company, audio, and then eventually video production as well. And I started doing sound engineering, like front of house monitors for artists and things of that nature. So I got to really work pretty much 360 degrees around the business, right? Just from being a DJ, being in the room, understanding, having building the relationships, the artists coming to me. We started a marketing agency at a certain point. It was called Inglewood Times and Associates, right? And I kind of played off of LA Times. I'm from Inglewood. There was no ING Times. So we started ING Times. This was a branding and marketing agency. In 2005, we were one of the first music blogs. That's really what it was. You know, we were a blog. We had a video, we had a magazine style blog. And so what I realized is I was biting off more than I could chew because I wasn't really a full on journalist, like what I wanted to be. I felt like I was like a grassroots journalist and a video journalist because we were creating content. And so we kind of utilized that platform to work with artists in the local area. But then we would also get a contract with like Interscope, Capitol Records, Def Jam, Koch, Atlantic, all of these different entities. Because at the time, if folks remember in the streets, it wasn't just in LA, but everywhere, we was Snipe. Anybody know what sniping was? That sniping was these posters that were being erected all over the city. You know, we were basically breaking the law. we were vandalizing city property, literally. That was the legal ramification of it. But essentially, we were the street teams. I was a part of that kind of movement in LA, where driving rap vehicles for the record labels and going out doing the promotions when the artists are coming to town, when the executives are coming to town. We would know the routes from the airport. We would know the streets that they would take. When they come through, they could see their brand being placed in the city. And so one time I was doing that, and Rick Ross, Port of Miami, was just out. It was his debut album. He's out. He's coming to LA to do some promo. And I'm hitting the snipes. I'm all because I know he's coming in town. It's war season and shit. And he pulls up on me. Hey, you know, in his deep voice, I just wanna thank you, man, because you out here putting that work. I see you, da 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 da. And, you know, and I was like, wow, that was pretty dope. You know, it felt good. You know, I'm a part of the thing. And you know, one time the snipes. We was hitting up. We was hitting up all around the radio station because the artist was going to the radio station, Latoya Luckett, and she had this life size like poster. It was a life size of her whole body, really beautiful, and whatnot. And me and my team, we figured out a way to get it at the top of the tree across from the radio station. And, you know, as fate would have it, the radio station's like, I don't know what's going on, but your team is out working for you. Cause da, 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 da. And it was a whole thing. So, you know, just moments like that, being in the business. So working 360 degrees, I would eventually get back to not just the business side, but I would eventually get back to touring and just being an artist, you know. But before I actually got to DJ on tour, I went on tour as a stage manager. I went on tour as a production manager, as a tour manager, right, for artists. But while I'm doing that, I would double up. Depending on the artist that I was on, I would be the tour manager, the production manager, and the DJ. You know what I'm saying? And so that kind of was like more 360-degree understanding. I eventually went on tour with Omarion. When we did, when he dropped the Poster B single, I did that whole tour with him. He's back on TV, or he's on TV again. And we traveled the world doing some runs with that until a couple new singles came out. And then I would go on tour, touring with Omarion. Hold on, sorry about that. Touring with Omarion, we would have an opportunity for Lloyd to jump on the tour with us. And so now I'm tour DJing for Lloyd and Omarion internationally. And that was an amazing run. You know, I go on a couple other tours. I traveled with Justin Bieber, his tour. It was an artist that was opening up for him. Her name was Jasmine V. Really beautiful young girl, Latina. And she's a pop singer. And so I was her tour manager and her DJ for a while. And like one of the biggest tours that I ever went on, which I told you would come back when we see that Motown sound that I was doing in 17, 18. I went on tour with Stevie Wonder. And that was like, whoa, okay, pinch me. Am I still alive? You know, get up. And, you know, that it was like a one time thing, right? It was like, we just gonna do this one time and we hit it off. We hit it off, and he loved what I did, and he was like, yeah, he can come back. And so he brought me back, and I was like, well, this is a real thing. And it was like, so I probably done like a dozen shows with Stevie at this point now, you know. The last show being the show that he announced that he had to get a transplant for one of his kidneys, I believe. And so we were in the middle of London in the UK. We were at Hyde Park. It was 60,000 people in the crowd. Lionel Richie goes on. This is Lionel Richie and Stevie's night. So Lionel Richie performs, and then this small DJ from Inglewood, DJ Quest Coast, has to DJ in between and then bring out Stevie. And I'm a part of Stevie's actual show because it's called the Song Party Tour. Shouts out to DJ Malski, because that's his real like that's his DJ first. And Malski, being the man that he is, being, you know, DJing for the Rams and the Sparks and all of these sports teams, in which he would put me in the games. I've DJed Rams games, I've DJed Sparks games, you know, a lot of college basketball games, all kind of stuff like that. So because Mosky is he's one of the sports DJ gods in Los Angeles. It is what it is, right? But really good friend of mine, he called me and was like, yo, Stevie need a backup because I can't make it. And I'm like, damn, you must be kind of bossy to tell Stevie you can't make it, you know? But it's the truth, you know? We got contracts and we doing good things. And so he connects me. It works. We built a great relationship, and I'm just grateful to be able to like tell these stories, you know? Because I pretty much accomplished, other than like putting out a record that like actually does really, really well, that's the next phase for me. So it's putting out music, because I've toured, I've worked with the big artists, I've been behind the scenes, I'm in front of the scenes, I'm helping artists come to light, I'm launching artists. So it's like, now it's time to put out a record, you know?
Wow, this is a truly amazing story, man. I love the way that you've kind of painted the entire picture of your journey as a DJ from 14, you know, 10 years old, getting your first turntable, to, you know, working with Stevie Wonder, traveling the world. Like, you are an innovator. That's what I hear throughout your entire story. The way you think is not normal. You have a really great way to be able to solve problems using your intellect and doing it in very unique ways that help people. Like you said, like the way you thought about the additional product lines you add to your DJ career that turns your company into a full fledged entertainment and promotional company. Like, that's not what normal people do. And you figure out, how do you use this to move yourself, build more relationships, and position yourself as a more high value DJ that offers much more than just the DJing. And I think that that's an amazing trait that DJs that are listening to this can pick up on and figure out, how can you innovate and add more to the experiences you're offering through DJing. Like, I think that it's just genius the way you think. And I'm glad that you're able to tell the story and show, when you think outside the box, when you do the hard work and you care very deeply about serving others, great things happen. You build meaningful relationships and opportunities just come your way. And it gets to the point where you're being called to these opportunities as opposed to you going out and seeking them. And yeah, that's what you've really done. And it shows just a testament to your brand and what you've able to accomplish just working so hard and really putting in the work. So thank you for sharing the story. This is a really high quality interview. I'm really enjoying it in the way that you tell this story, man. And, you know, talk to me a little bit about kind of your branding and just kind of what your name means to you. You know, DJ Quest Coast, you know, and you've been developing this brand around yourself for many years now. You know, how did you come up with the name, and what does this brand mean to you?
Well, you know, your brand is what stays in the room when you actually leave. And so one of my good friends, Lawrence Dobson, from the 1500 Sound Academy, he always drills that into us. Yo, have you read the immutable 22 branding laws? Do you know the laws? What's law 13? And it's that energy that made me understand how powerful branding is. And then also just looking at the landscape of business, right? I got my name from one of my good friends growing up. You know, he was my best friend as a child. I was, you know, I'm Alfred. And so he's like, man, you can't be DJ Alfred, you know? But my friends called me Fred Cool at the time, you know? It was like Fred Cool, because my demeanor was like cool, calm, collected, you know? I was smooth, suave, a little pretty boy, you know? So I always had long hair, so this is like, I cut my hair all the way off and now it's growing back. But that being my personality, my friends called me Fred Cool. So my first company was called Fred Cool Entertainment, FCE. I got the tattoo, FCE, and it's other artists. So I had signed artists at that time. I'm 17, 18. You know, I got an artist who got the tattoo, you know, and other artists under him. Like, we were thinking like that. I always looked at myself as a DJ. Like, nobody could call me for a DJ and I would turn them down. Because if I couldn't fulfill it, I just call one of the homies. You know what I'm saying? And so my mind state was always like, we're a DJ service. We're a management. We're an agency. That was the mindset, whether that how the business was set up or not. That was the mindset. And so quite oftenly, if I couldn't do it, I had it in my contract early, 14, 15 years old. You're not contracting with DJ Quest Coast. You are contracting with Fred Cool Entertainment or Quest Coast Productions or whatever the entity was that I was operating at the time. You're contracting with that company, and that company will fulfill the DJ need. And there will be times where we'll declare the DJ, and there'll be other times where if I'm DJing some high school corporate parties or some proms or stuff, if I can't make it, I'm not about to stress my life that I can't make this $300 job or this $500 job or this $1,000 job. I made sure that there were DJs in place that could come in and actually fulfill the needs. And so I always operated my business that way. And I would always get kind of like different responses from other DJs, because there are other DJs who don't operate that way. Oh, I'm not available. Thank you. See you later. That's it. That's, you're just going to let the money go. You're not going to. I come from like an entrepreneurial background. My mom's an accountant. My dad's a contractor. So in contracting, it's the same thing. Can I take this job? If not, I'll take the job and subcontract it. And that's all we're doing. We're contractors, right? And sometimes you subcontract. Sometimes you do the direct job, right? And that's what my brand looks like. It was always bigger than me. I knew that me being the brand, I needed to have something that makes it bigger than me. Because if it's only me, if I only have to show up and I'm the only person that can generate income, then it's a job. It's not a business. And I knew that early. And so I always operated it that way. My contracts now. So right now I have a contract with PBC, Premier Boxing Champions. I do all of their fights on Fox. And pre-COVID, I did all of the Showtime events too. But since travel kind of slowed down, I stopped going East Coast to West Coast. So I'm handling all of the West Coast right now. And hopefully we open back up. I'll get back to the Showtime deals. But however, even that setup where if I can't make it, I could put somebody in the place, you know? And I think it's important for DJs to look at themselves like that, like a contractor. Don't just think about yourself as a DJ and your name. You can always put your brand on something, but you almost build two brands. You almost build like a company brand and then the DJ brand. And if you separate the two, then you're building two assets and not just one.
Wow, man. I love the way you think. And I'm sure that everyone listening got a lot of value out of this. You really laid it down to how to scale yourself and maximize your income opportunities as a DJ and building a business around it, not just DJing for a service, but how do you build a DJ entity that's allowing you to make money with the services being done? You know, yeah. And you learn how to build a team and manage those team effectively. And you've been doing it since 17. And it's like, it shows just how you had that mindset at a very young age and that have been building upon that ever since, and which had led to your success, and you're doing really well. Super proud of you. I'm really glad that we're connected. You know, I would love for you to you know, leave us with some last pieces of advice of some things that you know now that you wish you knew when you were first getting started before we enter into lightning round.
I think one of the biggest pieces is capture the moment. You know, I can't tell you how many artists that I've stood next to, how many beautiful, I'm talking about your favorite artists, right? I stood next to them. I've done some cool things and only I know. They forget and I have the memory. So capture the moment. I'm talking about film it, take pictures, capture the moment, because over time that will become how you get to explain your legacy. I have to tell you a lot of the things that I've done. I have footage with Stevie though, you know, but I traveled the world with Nas and Damian Marley and I have no footage of it. Have zero footage. I can't show you, but the things that I saw on that tour changed my life forever. So I would tell you, please catalog, film, create content, because that will be what leaves behind. You know, you can have the memories. Oftentimes the ego will speak and say, oh, I don't want to take a picture because, take the picture, bro. Take the picture. And still don't think about your ego. You know what I'm saying? Like, take the picture, be cool, get your content, because pictures say 1,000 words, video says 1,000,000. So please, please catalog and capture the content of the things that you are doing. It's important.
Great advice, brother. Ready to jump into the lightning round?
Yeah, I'm ready, bro.
Awesome. Describe your DJ setup, hardware and software.
So originally I was turntables and a two-channel mixer. Battle style, you know, but not that I was battling, but it was just easier to get to, right? But over the years, I've went to a controller. I'm a Pioneer controller, DDJ guy. I just like the way it feels. But I really, really love the phasers. I like the phasers that go on top of the turntables and you can move and go needleless. I think that's one of the greatest inventions to the turntable, because you can still stay on the turntable. But I like, I'm a producer DJ, so I like the buttons. I like to be able to do things because I can still scratch and get back to it. I feel like I pay my dues enough to be able to graduate to a controller for ease and grace, if you will.
Besides yourself, who's your favorite DJ?
Oh man, there's a list of them. One of my best friends as a DJ is DJ Battlecat. He's amazing. Jazzy Jeff, DJ Melody, DJ Dummy. Of course, the legends, just because of what they did and the shoulders that I stand on. So the Flash and the Herks and the and all of the Grand Masters, like, you can't front on nobody. Like, I love DJs. If you're a good DJ, you don't have to have a big name. I know some DJs that ain't got no big name that'll give people problems. You know what I'm saying? And or I also respect the DJs who understand the business and know how to scale their business, right? And so I respect those DJs, not just the guys with the best techniques. You know what I'm saying? Like, I look at the well-roundedness. How good is your library? I have DJs that I call and we just talk music. Then I have DJs that we call and we talk technique. Then we talk the business, you know, or the clubs or the scene. All those are different types of DJs, and I think they're all valuable. So it's really important to kind of know what kind of DJ you are. And don't be mad about that. Just own that.
What has been your favorite party or event you've DJed at and why?
Man. I don't think anything can top DJing in front of 60,000 people in between Lionel Richie and Stevie Wonder. I think that's one of my greatest moments. I've DJed for some really, really large crowds. Okay, here's one party that, you know, again, I wish I had more footage of it. I DJed Damian Marley's birthday party in London that Nas threw. Me and Green Lantern, we are in a Nigerian-owned sushi house, multi-level, in one of the richest parts of London, right? And this is before Amy Winehouse has transitioned, right? So she's at the party. So Amy's there. I mean, it was just a moment. It was a moment. And when we come out, paparazzi's there. Just like kind of one of my first moments of like, oh, you're kind of in the mix of paparazzi. As soon as we come out, it's Nas is holding Amy Winehouse. The next day, the picture's like, oh, it's Nas dating Amy Winehouse. It's like, damn, this is crazy. We was just a little toasty. We was just leaving the club. And paparazzi in the news was spinning. But yeah, that was a party that, you know, I wish I had more pictures of, because I don't, you know.
Who's the most interesting person you've met through DJing?
That's a great question. The most interesting person I've met through DJing. I mean, interesting is such a broad term, right? I have been able to make some really cool contacts DJing. So, oh, just kind of random. DJing award show season, I think I was maybe at the Gersh agency or A-List on, or I can't remember what party it was, but one of these agencies I'm DJing for. But I meet the writer and showrunner. I'm not sure if he's a showrunner, but he's definitely the writer for Dexter, you know. It's just like random, you know. I meet him and his wife, and we actually hit it off and become cool, you know. Me and my lady would go hang out with them sometimes, and it was just kind of random, you know, because at the time, I don't know if they're still together, but I think they are, but his wife was Luna. Her name is Luna, but she was on New York Undercover. So, like, for me, my childhood, I grew up watching New York Undercover and the beautiful little Puerto Rican on New York Undercover becomes a friend later in life just because they love my DJ set. You know, it's pretty cool.
What's one thing that you think is missing from live streaming for DJs?
Oh, I think the clear and concise way for DJs to monetize, I think it's kind of, it's not one size fits all. If you have a brand and you can get some sponsors, maybe if you build up your page on Twitch, Twitch, you can charge some subscriptions. But I always think that the platform is so important, and there's not a, so I'm happy to learn more about your platform, because I think the biggest piece is having a platform in which we can, like, you know, control or have some type of, maybe we can invest in it, maybe we can have some type of ownership in it. I always look at the DJ being like the, they got the shortest end of the stick. We don't have a union, we don't have nothing to protect our craft, but there's not a party in America that happens without us. And, you know, and now that you have these DSPs, the value of the DJ has kind of certain, the value of the playlisters or the selectors necessarily might have went down. But the DJ, you know, the DJ, the real DJ that has all of those components that comprise to make the DJ. The DJ is not just a person with equipment or with music or that knows how to play, or, you know, I think all of those components coming together, to me, like, you got to have good mic game. To me, you got to have good mic game. And not like you talk a lot. You got to know how to talk, when to talk, and when you do, it sounds great. And I think if you can do that mixed in with good timing, record selection, technique, good business, you're the whole package, right? So to get back, what are we missing in live streaming? I just don't really think that we have the control. You know, I think DJs should have a license at this point, you know, something, because what separates anybody from going to the Guitar Center, getting a controller and doing the party from Jazzy Jeff? Right? It becomes the marketing, the branding, the experience that you will have. And I think we all have seen throughout pandemic how therapeutic the DJ is, right? So we have to live stream at this point. I don't think live stream is going anywhere. No matter how much we open up, it's gonna be here. So DJs have to think how they're going to monetize it. Cause if not, you're just on online teaching in front of people for hours. And what does that do for you? You know, maybe it's good practice, you know, maybe good for interaction with your engaging audience, but you can't pay your bills with that.
And a shout out to any DJs that you know personally whose story should be shared on this podcast.
Oh, yeah, man. I think you want to go get my brother DJ Artistic. It's one of my favorite DJs. You asked me one of my that's one of my favorite DJs, too, who's my age, right? Oftentimes, you talk about who your favorite DJs is, people that come before you, right? Nah, Artistic is one of my favorites right now. And we came up together. We do a lot of work together. And he is the testament of how you can utilize video content and to actually grow a brand. He skips over so many DJs who may have had more experience, whatever the case, they might think they better, whatever the case, he beat all of us, I'll say that, out in building brand equity for brands to want to buy in. You also want to tap into one of my favorite female DJs, right? This is just a random plug. I don't even know her really. DJ Siren. She's an Asian DJ. Not that that matters, but she's a woman. She's an Asian. And her man, listen to me. She will give a lot of people a run for their money. And it ain't got nothing to do with gender. She's like, one of the dopest female DJs I've ever seen. DJ Livia, another young female. The twins, Amira and I love those girls. Like, I'm so inspired by that, because that's the technique, the art and the craft. That's the part, the DJ stuff, that's like, ooh, okay, yeah, you might have equipment, but like, but can you do that? No, you can't do that. So okay, it still separates us. So we'll always know the differences of the DJs. Green Lantern, that's my brother, you know. It's so many DJs that can be named. Man, you want to get DJ Battle Cat, you know. I'm from LA, and I'm not biased, but like kind of biased. So a lot of my DJs is gonna be from Cali, you know. That's just because that's who I know, you know. But I know that there are some killers. Philadelphia has some of the greatest DJs. DJ Active, I mean, it just goes that Jeff. I mean, it just list goes crazy. New York has some crazy DJs. But hey, don't front on us Cali DJs. We got that. We ready for all the smoke. You hear me?
Awesome, brother. Well, we look forward to hearing their stories on the podcast one day. And any DJs that are interested, they can sign up at djsignup.com. And brother, where can people find you online or even in person if you're still doing events?
Yeah, for sure. You can always find me at a DJ called Quest, like a tribe called Quest, a DJ called Quest. I spell Quest Q-W-E-S-S, excuse me. And questcoast.com, it's kind of under construction right now, but it'll be back live, so you can always go to questcoast.com. No pun intended, but you could just Google me, man. I didn't talk about the festivals that I do, but I produce a lot of festivals. The West Adams Block Party is coming back. My company is doing a lot of live streaming solutions right now. So I have a company called Dilio, and we're a video production company. We do a lot of live streaming solutions. We stream a lot of the weigh-ins for some of the boxing matches, or just random events, from political events to artistic events in Leimert Park or in a studio in front of our LED walls. So definitely looking to help and work with artists, DJs, any content creators that's looking to build content. We got cameras, we got switchers, we got live streaming solutions in real time, on location, in studio. And you'll find me somewhere on the internet coming this year. It's going to be some live streaming stuff that we're working on. The West Adams Block Party is coming back this year, but it's going to be virtual this year. Shameless plug. I'm one of the only DJs, and probably the only DJ in Los Angeles that scored a cannabis retail license. So I'll be opening up a dispensary that intertwines the music and the cannabis world together. And so I'm just endeavoring on whatever is promising and how we can continue to build and grow generational wealth. Hey man, Les Brown was a DJ, okay? I want y'all to know, don't front on yourself. DJing is just a stepping stone. You might DJ for the rest of your life, but there's so many other opportunities out there for us, and we have to explore them all. Being a DJ is just a great a way to start a business, right? It's like you're a barber, but then you have to get a barber shop. But then after you get a barber shop, are you going to franchise? Are you going to scale? What are you going to do? Are you going to get a product? So think about it like that, DJs. Like, don't just think about the party. The party is one thing, but the party promoter often makes more money than the actual DJ. And so, you know, shouts out to Kenway Live. That's what I want to tell you. Kenway Live, get him. That brother, he took parties to the next level. You know, regular DJ, come home, like 2,000 people in the club. Think about the power you have when you can bring 2,000 people out. It's artists that can't do that, but DJs are artists. But we understand what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the rappers, the singers, and what DJs are artists. So, like, you know, think about it that way. And I yield.
Awesome, man. This has been an amazing interview. People, you need to follow and check out DJ Quest Coast. He is doing it. He has done it. And he has dropped amazing gems on this podcast. So I appreciate you, brother. Our brother is very wise and super smart at what he's doing. And he's dropping gems and teaching everyone. So thank you, brother. We appreciate you being on the show.
Man, I appreciate you for having me, Daryl. And anything you need from me, bro, I'm a phone call away, bro. Anytime, bro.